Minus 15.
Respect all, fear none.
Into the upper deck.
Intensity is not a perfume.
Oh my goodness.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hope everyone had a happy, safe, and filling Thanksgiving holiday weekend and are ready to kick off this holiday season after a nice weekend of family and friends, football, soccer. Hope everyone enjoyed this past weekend as we now get ready to enter December, the last month of the year. Welcome into the Masson All Access Podcast, everybody. Bobby Blanco, Amy Jennings from the Masson Web Studio. We are live on the Masson Nationals Facebook page, YouTube channel, and of course, you can listen to us after the fact on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts. Subscribe to the Masson All Access Podcast. That would be our holiday gift from you to us if you could do that. That'd be wonderful. Amy, good to see you. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. I love Thanksgiving.
It's the best.
It might be my favorite holiday. I mean, my family, you know, most people, you see the pictures of the food at like noon or one, you know. Like normal families. My family's pretty dysfunctional. So it was like 7 p.m. We're still like, you know, heating up sides. We didn't eat until probably 7 something. But
what?
I know. Isn't that crazy?
That's a little
dysfunctional
crazy.
Dysfunctional is what we call that, Bobby. But it was good.
The food How many
good.
People?
Maybe like 10-ish. Not that much.
That's not that much.
It's like my cousins and then my immediate family, my grandma. We go to my grandma's house. But
is it because, like, I'm just imagining like everyone sitting around, especially this past year when there was the World Cup still on. Right. I'm just imagining everyone sitting around the TV, watching the parade, watching the dog show, watching sports.
Exactly.
And then like, oh, it's almost four.
Time to eat, yeah. But then I have a Cowboys fan in my family. Ah. So we were watching that game.
So you guys, was he waiting to eat after the game?
Or she? I mean, I think it just worked out like that. But, you know, he was watching the game the whole time. So I guess that makes it go a little bit quicker, but.
Yeah, so like when like as Commanders fans, like whenever they play the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, they start at 4:30, right?
Right.
We always make sure to eat before the game.
Like a normal person.
Right.
Like
and so we can all sit on the couch and be ready for the game. Yeah. You know, the Lions, I like the tradition, but their game never ever matters. So like cook and prepare during that game so you can
That's
be ready
true.
For the 4 o'clock game and
what's
the,
your favorite Thanksgiving food?
I think I say this every single year. It is by far my abuelita's stuffing.
Ooh.
She makes it with chorizo. So just like think of like normal stuffing and just like bread, Ooh. Carbs, deliciousness. And then you just add spicy sausage to it.
That sounds so
it's
good.
It's the best part of my Thanksgiving. It's the best part that the
Next
world has
Next year
to
we're
offer.
Going to Bobby's house.
I actually,
his family so I can eat before 8 p.m.
I think I had to make it last year because it was COVID and we were being extra cautious. Or maybe I didn't go. I don't know. But there was some reason why I had to make it last year, and I did a pretty good job.
Really?
So maybe next year, one of these years, I'll make it for the office and I'll bring it in.
There we go.
Because stuffing needs to be, not just this stuffing, stuffing in general needs to be year-round. We need to have it at Christmas, Easter.
Yeah, you never eat stuffing
it's
any other
so
time,
good.
Do you?
It's the best part of Thanksgiving. And why don't we eat this year-round? I will never, ever get over it. I want to make it again for Christmas, but we do this whole other thing for Christmas. It's like, why don't we just have a side? It's tough being on having been on a wedding diet
Ooh,
and then going on
yeah.
a honeymoon and then Thanksgiving and now it's the holidays. It's just a lot of eating.
Yeah.
And sitting.
I mean, no complaints, but it does make life. I guess you have a Peloton now.
Well, I was going to say I did my first Peloton ride on Monday since before the wedding because we were so busy. It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
Really?
Yeah, actually
it's
did
tough.
Okay.
The first one back.
I know.
Especially after Thanksgiving, but you've had like a bunch of holidays. So
yeah, it's been nothing but like we had a wedding before the week before our wedding. So it was just, it's been a whirlwind of a November now going into December.
Yeah. Well, keeps things exciting. Keeps
Speaking
us on our toes.
Of the sports and the World Cup, did you watch the U.S. game yesterday?
I did. It was
U.S.
exciting.
Advance. It was nerve-wracking.
It was, 100%.
I compared it to, it's like watching the World Cup with like elimination on the line is like watching playoff baseball.
Right.
Or soccer. Sorry, just soccer. Like, an intense soccer game is like watching playoff baseball because it's like so methodical. It's slow. You only get one or two chances to score. And if you don't capitalize or if like the other team capitalizes, it's so stressful.
Right. I think it's like the same complaints with people who are like, don't love watching baseball. It's kind of the same thing. Cause it's like, I mean, it's obviously way more like fast paced, but you know, it's like low scoring, you know, if you don't really know what's going on, it's kind of like, bleh.
Yeah.
But I'm really into it and I'm not a big soccer person.
Yeah.
I'll admit it. Are you a soccer person?
I am. Yeah. And I love international soccer. Okay. I mean, like international sports is like very cool. Like that's like the highest honor an athlete can achieve, right? Playing for your country.
Right.
In any sport. But yeah, no, I love soccer. The World Cup is one of my favorite like events, like ever, like sporting events ever. So really? Like, I think it's really cool. So happy the U.S. advanced. And now I wonder, because the World Baseball Classic is this spring, starting True. In March. I wonder, I mean, obviously soccer is the world sport. Baseball isn't as widely played around the globe, but like it's going to be played here. Baseball is America's pastime. Baseball is, of course, very popular in Latin America, Asian mm-hmm. countries, a few European countries. So like it's going to be, I think, pretty exciting. Not the level of the World Cup, of course, no. but it's still going to be pretty exciting to have an international baseball tournament, a get back and played on our home soil in the springtime.
Yeah, it's a good way for, you know, people who don't watch baseball to kind of get behind it. It's kind of like the same way with the World Cup. It's like, you know, half of these people probably never watch soccer, but if it's your team, your country, you know, it kind of gives you something to get behind, and maybe it'll be similar for the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, like, of course, like Nats fans and Phillies fans and Mets fans like will butt heads through the course of the regular season of Major League Baseball, but World Baseball Classic, everyone's Team USA, right. and you know, brothers in arms. So I think that's a really cool part of the international sports. And now baseball has its own. Well, they've had it before, but like it's been a couple years removed since the last one.
And it's just different. Like the Olympics, the World Cup, all of it. It's kind of different when you're getting behind your country. Yeah. You know, I think 100%. I don't know. It's exciting.
Yeah, wearing that red, white, and blue across your chest. Right. Like that's gotta be just a surreal feeling for any athlete.
Right.
And, you know, if the U.S. can, I don't think they've named their full roster yet, but if they can like put out like one of the superstars, like Mike Trout playing center field or something like that, that'd be really cool. I mean, I know there's no Bryce Harper, cause I know he's recovering from an injury. He's not gonna be ready to play until midseason if at the earliest next year, but like having like Bryce Harper, like bat second for the U.S. team,
you can recognize,
or like third behind Mike Trout, like playing right field. That'd be so cool.
Right.
That'd be so. And like, you know, Gerrit Cole, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, like as your starting rotation, like that. I know some of those guys probably won't because they're older and they're focused on their major league seasons, but like that would be so
something
cool.
Something to look
that's
forward
really
to.
That's really cool. Yeah. Juan Soto playing for the DR.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's really cool. So, yeah, I just, you know, with the World Cup right now, it's, and then all the excitement we saw yesterday when the U.S. advanced to the round of 16. By the way, shout out to them, third straight World Cup that they've qualified for because they didn't qualify in 2018, that they've advanced out of the group stage, which is pretty impressive. But, I just wonder if there's going to be the same amount of excitement for the World Baseball Classic.
When
I think locally
start?
Here in March. I believe. Yeah. Locally in like the U.S., I think, because I think there's a lot more baseball fans than like soccer fans. Mm-hmm. So I think it won't get the worldwide attention, but it's still get pretty good national attention, especially if it's going to be like played in the U.S.
Yeah, it's different here than, you know, most countries.
And you're going to be familiar with so many more players because a lot of them, of course, play in the major leagues.
Right.
So like, you know, you're going to see Juan Soto play for the DR. You're going to see Shohei Ohtani possibly play for Japan. Like, that's going to be really, really,
that's
really cool.
Yeah.
So, one World Cup stage. Also, like that the World Cup's being played during the holidays. I think that's really fun.
I know.
But one World Cup or international competition moving into the next year. And then now that transitions just to baseball. And, you know, today's the last day of November. We're getting into December, the holiday season. One of the signs of the festive part of the year is the winter meetings. That's coming up next week. We'll get a recap of that, or a preview, I should say, coming up at the second half of the podcast. But we got some actual roster moves to talk about, Amy.
Yeah.
The Nationals making not just, I think this is important, not just like some signings, but major league signings. Mm-hmm. Both of these signings are added to the 40-man roster. They signed third baseman Jhaymer Candelario to a one-year deal, $5 million with $1 million in incentives, and then also outfielder Stone Garrett to a major league contract, similar to when they signed Sam Clay and Kyle Finnegan, as Jesse Dougherty pointed out, to basically a career minor leaguer to a major league deal after he was DFA'd by the Diamondbacks. Let's start with Candelario. Mm-hmm. You know, I think initially when it was reported, I was thinking, okay, this is another third baseman who's going to compete with Carter Kieboom, Ildemar Vargas, possibly Jake Alou in spring training for the third baseman. But then we find out $5 million. That's your starting third baseman.
Yeah,
that's a handful. I don't think the Nationals are going to hand out $5 million for Candelario to possibly sit on the bench. But a significant signing, one of their first major league signings of the offseason. Your initial reaction to Jhaymer Candelario becoming a National?
I like this. I mean, we talked about it last week. This is the kind of signing we're going to see. Somebody who, you know, had a few really good years, but is probably looking to have a bounce back year. Somebody you can get for a little bit cheaper. I think he was projected to make $7 million. Mm-hmm. In arbitration, so the Nationals got him for a little bit cheaper, most probably because he had a down year last year.
Right.
It kind of surprised me, I guess, because we've been talking about that third base position so much with, you know, Jake Alou. Maybe this is his year. He's going to get a shot. I think we both, you know, predicted that Carter Kieboom, you know, I think it's time for him to move on. Ildemar Vargas they brought back. So I wasn't sure that they were going to go after an everyday third baseman, but I like it.
Yeah, interesting you say that because I totally agree. I definitely like it. At the low cost, like you said, veteran player that will fill a role. We'll get into some of his numbers in a bit, but like if he reverts back to one of his older versions of himself, he can be an asset to this team. But yeah, you mentioned kind of surprising that they addressed this position. Early on in this offseason, when we were talking about holes the Nationals needed to fill, it was starting rotation. It was first base / DH. It was corner outfield. Mm-hmm. Their first signing is a third baseman, and I think that's telling in one of two ways. Either Carter Kieboom isn't as far along in his rehab from Tommy John as we thought, and you know we'll hear from Mike Rizzo next week at the winter meetings. He'll probably be asked about that. Or they're not comfortable going into next year with Carter Kieboom and Ildemar Vargas and Jake Alou at third base. They felt like they needed an upgrade at third base. Either way, not a good, I guess not. It's very telling what they think of their third base depth. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they went out and got a veteran third base, he's played part of seven seasons in the major leagues. You know, he's got more experience than Kieboom, of course, and obviously Alou, and probably, I think, more than Vargas as well. So I think it was very telling that they went out and got a third baseman. The contract works out. I mean, the money works out and all that stuff. And if he reverts back to his old self, that's great. But it's very telling the way that they think about their third base depth and maybe even specifically Carter Kieboom and the way he's progressing or not progressing.
Right. And, you know, the $5 million surprised me a little bit just because, you know, Luke Voit was due to make $8 million and, they weren't willing to do that. $5 million isn't a lot of money for a lot of teams. But, you know, in a year like this, when we're talking about probably most minor league deals, you know, through the offseason, $5 million is a pretty good amount. So I think it's pretty much said that he's going to be playing third base every day for the Nationals if you're playing him that much. The good thing about him is he can play first base if you need to, and he's a switch hitter. You could be your designated hitter, so he is versatile. You had a good article on that this morning about how he brings that to the table, and those are the kind of signings that they need to make. We mentioned the down year last year. He only hit .217 with 13 home runs. That's much different than his 2020 and 2021 season where there's only two other third basemen with higher wars in those two seasons than him. And that was Jose Ramirez and Manny Machado. So, you know, you kind of know what you were getting in those 2 years. He had .278 with a .356 on base percentage and an .814 OPS. So a down year last year, but that's the kind of gamble you're taking. You're hoping you can have a bounce back year on maybe they can flip him at the deadline.
Yeah. Back in 2021, he tied for the major league lead with 42 doubles. He also hit 16 homers and had a Fangraphs war of 3.9. And then you can even go back to his first full season in Detroit in 2018, he hit a career high 19 home runs to go along with a 2.2 WAR per Fangraphs. Mm-hmm. So there, like you take those three seasons. I know 2020 was a shortened season, but like they take those three seasons, you get something, some combination of that as opposed to what he saw in 2022. I think that's an upgrade at third base. You're talking about upgrading over an injured Carter Kieboom, a Michael Franco. Ildemar Vargas played well at the end of the season, but you know that is a significant upgrade at a high level position. You know that he's playing the hot corner now. Defensively, he wasn't as great. He has a career -19 defensive runs saved at third base, but that's mostly due to a -11 in 2018, his first full season playing third base. And he actually has played better now. It's like a fraction of the innings and playing time at first base, but he does have a +1 defensive run saved at first base. So that shows he can do the job at first. Again, limited action there, but you touched on it briefly, like the versatility that he brings. And this is what we're going to see from, I think it's very clear what the Nationals are looking for in terms of free agency and acquiring players with major league experience. You need guys that are, one, looking for bounce back years that you can get at a low cost, and two, guys that can play multiple positions. They can do different things for Davey Martinez. It allows Davey Martinez to be more flexible in his lineup construction, both in the infield and in the actual batting order. So he's a switch hitter. That helps a lot too. You can play matchups in that way against a starting pitcher. He does hit better right-handed, though, in significantly less plate appearances than left-handed. I believe it's .270 to .230 right-handed versus left-handed hitting for Candelario. But that's still some of that versatility that he brings. And that's what we're going to see, I believe, from the most part for this offseason from the Nationals. Versatile guys that could play multiple positions at a low cost.
Exactly. He's not just versatile defensively, but you mentioned he's a switch hitter as well. So that allows you, gives you more room to play matchups. And the minus 19 career defensive run saves is a little bit concerning, but you also have to think about, what do the Nationals have there? I mean, Carter Kieboom. Right. I mean, that's an upgrade from Ildemar Vargas being your everyday third baseman. Hoping Carter Kieboom is back at the start of the season, and then Jake Alou, who hasn't broken the big leagues yet. So it's an upgrade, I think, no matter what, and you have to keep that into consideration as well.
He was originally signed by the Cubs as an amateur free agent, and then he was traded to the Tigers at the 2017 trade deadline in July, including former friend Alex Avila that went back to the Cubs. And then, yeah, he had significant success, you know, not all-star level success, but decent success over his career at Detroit. And, you know, this is got non-tendered, bad season, but, like, you know, not necessarily picking from scraps by the Nationals, but you're looking at guys like guys that, you know, have a good track record and just don't fit into their current team's plans that can maybe fit in the Nationals' plans. And this is, we both agree this is a good signing and that kind of mindset. Now, again, I just wonder, because I think you and I were both comfortable, and maybe obviously we were wrong, but comfortable with the idea of going into next spring training with presumably a healthy Carter Kieboom, Ildemar Vargas, who played well at the end of last season, and then, you know, giving Jake Alou a shot at third base. And then, and again, it just shows the Nationals were not, and then they were not comfortable. And I applaud them for making that decision. That's a hard decision to make on a former first round pick, Carter Kieboom. Now, it could be that he's a little further behind his rehab than they expected, so they just didn't want to risk it. And of course, injuries happen across the board. But I do wonder what this means for Carter Kieboom's future, and what he will bring to the table this season, if anything at all.
Right. I mean, we've seen this in years past where they go out and sign, you know, either utility guys or third baseman. But I think this time, I think it means we might have seen the end of Carter Kieboom.
Really?
I do.
Yeah. I still think he gets a chance. I mean, he's going to have a chance to win the job back. And, like, you know, this could be going back into Candelario's versatility. Like, if not, you know, best case scenario may be that Carter Kieboom wins the job at third base and you move Candelario to first base and you push Joey Meneses to the outfield. That might be a best case scenario for the Nationals right now, or Candelario plays is your DH, whatever it may be. You know, you're having more guys that can do multiple things. That's a good sign. But I kind of agree with you. It doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. It's going to take a lot for Kieboom to get back into, I guess, the good graces is a way to put it for in the
Nationals'
eyes.
What's just the shame is obviously he never proved himself before. And then you have Tommy John, you're rehabbing, you're coming back. They sign somebody to take your job. It's kind of like he's crawling out of a hole here.
Yeah.
I mean, you're coming from way behind. So that's kind of the unfortunate thing. But it wouldn't be the end of the world if you can he earns the spot. He can play third base. You can move Candelario to first, Joey Meneses to the outfield. You know, that's a way to get both of their bats in the lineup, in both Meneses and Candelario.
Yeah, so interesting move for the Nationals, and agree that it's a good move. And, you know, again, at the beginning of the, when it was first, like, being reported, and our Mark Zuckerman confirmed it, you know, it's like, okay, that's another just competition you're adding to a high-level position. And then, oh, no, he's going to make $5 million, maybe $6 million this year. He's going to be the starter.
Right.
So, interesting way that shaked out. The other move that they made, Stone Garrett, 27-year-old outfielder, he was DFA'd by the Diamondbacks earlier this offseason. Originally, you know his story. Did you read up on his story?
No.
Oh, so, well, first of all.
Other than his nickname.
Right. Okay, you have that story. I have a different story. Major league deal at the league minimum. So he still has 6 years of control. He's making bare bones dollars this year. Originally eighth round draft pick out of high school by the Marlins back in 2014. He was cut in 2020. After he was cut, he decided that he was going to give up on baseball and start a new career in real estate. Then in 2021, he connected with a former Marlins scout on LinkedIn who got him a tryout and basically helped him sign a minor league deal with the Diamondbacks. He had a pretty good career over two seasons with the Diamondbacks between their AA and AAA affiliates. Makes his major league debut this past August, contributes for the rest of the season. unfortunately gets DFA, but now gets a major league deal from the Nationals and is added to the 40-man roster.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Right? That's pretty impressive.
Interesting. That is very impressive.
It's talk about staying cool in the story. Fight.
Right. Stay in the fight. I mean, wow. Good for him. Yeah. My only story was that, well, the whole time we've been saying that we're going to call him Garrett Stone instead of Stone Garrett. Yeah. Just kind of sounds backwards. Still a really good baseball name, but that's not his real name. They call him Stone because they call his dad's nickname was Rock. So he's Stone.
Rock, R-O-C-K?
R-O-C-K, yeah. So I told Bobby that before, and he was like kind of half listening, kind of not listening. And then he was like, 5 seconds later. Oh,
admittedly,
it
took me a little longer to get than I would have.
I get it, but that's okay. Cool. Still really good baseball name. But yeah, he's only played in 27 big league games this year for the Diamondbacks to finish out the season. But in his last two seasons in the minors, he hit 25 home runs in both. He could be a power bat that the Nationals have need in this lineup and that we've been talking about them going out and getting this offseason.
28 homers and 95 RBIs and a 900 OPS at AAA Reno this past season. And you actually did, I mean, you mentioned the 27 games. Wasn't terrible at the major leagues. Hit .276.
Four home runs,
8 doubles, 10 RBIs. That's not bad. He struck out a lot. Yeah. That's going to be the downside, right? The 27 strikeouts and 84 plate appearances, only drawing 3 walks. That's going to be an issue right there. We could have said the same thing about like Joey Meneses coming up. And a lot of these, we say the same thing about CJ Abrams right now. So a lot of these younger players with not a lot of major league experience. Now, he is 27, so he's not young, but not a lot of major league experience. They tend to strike out a lot. It's about making adjustments, typically on off-speed stuff, because you can sit on the fastball. But yeah, I mean, he did. It's not like he's just, you know, you think of a guy, when I think of a story, I think of a guy that was almost out of baseball. You're like, why are you taking a guy that almost like was out of the game? But like, he clearly has skills.
Right.
He was drafted. He's stuck in the Marlins system for 6 seasons. And then was able to earn his way back after taking some time off and then made a major league debut. That's an awesome story.
Right, exactly. It seems like the strikeouts have kind of been an issue for his whole career since high school, but he is a power bat. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, give and take. That's kind of what you get with that kind of guy. But, I mean, good story. He'll be added into the mix. The Nationals signed outfielder Derek Hill to a minor league contract earlier this offseason. You have Alex Call out there. So it seems like there's going to be, you know, a little bit of a competition there for that left field spot. But you like what you get, especially in Stone Garrett's bat.
Yeah, he also plays all 3 outfield position, primarily in the corner, but has played all 3. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and again, limited action, 27 games, but he did produce a plus WAR per Fangraphs over 27 games. So he contributes. Mm-hmm. I mean, his defensive metrics were basically average across the board. So he's not hurting you there. He's not doing anything spectacular, but he's not hurting you.
Right.
This is major league minimum, again, kind of like how the Nationals acquired Sam Clay, Kyle Finnegan, giving a major league contract to a guy who was basically a minor leaguer for a long time, and just seeing what kind of sticks. Now, I don't think you're going to see Stone Garrett be the starting left fielder on opening day, but he has a chance to make this team.
Right.
And you know, you'll be going up against your Alex Calls and trying to become one of those backup outfielders. He's played in the major leagues. He had a small amount of success. Take a chance. You're paying him literally the bare minimum.
Right, exactly. Not the most exciting and flashy of signings, but that's going to be this whole offseason.
Right.
And at least it's, you know, a guy you're signing to a major league deal, so they're going to have a pretty good shot of you know, maybe making the opening day roster.
So those are the first 2 major league contracts handed out by Mike Rizzo this offseason. I think, I said at the top of the conversation, I think it's worth noting that these are major league deals. Like, not a minor league deal with an invite to spring training, which we've already seen this so far this offseason. Major league contracts. So we're now getting into that time of the offseason where you're starting to add to the major league roster. And these are your first 2. Now, the roster is full. 40 men on the roster right now. Let's now use that to transition into our preview of the winter meetings. I think this will be a busy winter meetings because it's going to be the first like real winter meetings we've had since 2019, right? Because of COVID and other situations. So
they'll have to make room.
Well, they'll have to make move. But like, I think we'll see roster across the major leagues. I think we'll see roster moves. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll see the Nationals make a big splash. I don't think we'll see the Nationals make any other major. Maybe they do, but they'll be along these lines. But yes, they have to make room. And then you're looking at the two main events for next week for the Nationals. It's the Rule 5 draft and the draft lottery. I flipped those around. The draft lottery is Tuesday night. The Rule 5 draft is Wednesday night or afternoon. They have to make room if they're going to acquire a new player next year. And you're looking at guys like, I just mentioned Alex Call, Josh Palacio, shout out to Jay Flan on Twitter for referencing those names too.
Those fringe guys.
Lucius Fox, maybe even guys on the 40-man roster that you're going to have to probably move to make more room if you're going to try to acquire. And I would expect them to acquire someone from the Rule 5 draft. They don't normally do so. They haven't ever, I don't think, under Mike Rizzo. But you have the number one pick. You might as well use it.
Right. The Nationals are going to be busy in a different way this winter meetings than they have been. And the two, you know, main headlines for them is where they'll end up after the draft lottery. If they'll get that number one overall pick, they have a, 16.5% chance to get the number one overall pick. So that'll be interesting. And then the Rule 5 draft. I think they haven't taken somebody in the over a decade in the Rule 5 draft. But this year, you have the number one overall pick. You have a clear need. Now at this point, I think since they went out and got some bats, you have a clear need for an arm. There's some good names on this list. You have the number one overall pick. You have to take somebody, at least one person in the Rule 5 draft.
Yeah.
And I think they will.
Yeah. And the only, I guess we want to say downside to doing so is that, and I think this is a major reason why Mike Rizzo didn't use the Rule 5 draft for so long is because you have to keep that player on the roster for the entirety of the season or give them back or at least offer them back. Mm-hmm. And you only get half of the money. You're $100,000, I believe it is, and you're only getting half of it back if you give them back up. So, you know, before the Nationals were a competing team building their roster with major leaguers, Rule 5 draft is fringe major leaguers, top level AAA guys that just don't fit on their own club's roster right now. So I agree. I think you have to, it's a resource that they haven't used before that when you're a rebuilding team, you should use, especially with the first pick. You have the whole infield together. So a pitcher is an interesting way to go. I don't know if you fill out your rotation this way, though. I know because now you have, I'm assuming you're going to have two spots open because I'm question marks on Strasburg and now Eric Fetty's non-tendered. But, I mean, yeah, if there's some guy that has a proven track record, I guess it's worth a flyer.
Yeah, I mean, the Nationals will take chances on arms. We know that.
Right.
It's going to have to be, I think, it'll have to be a guy that's proven themselves at AAA and hopefully had some time. I mean, at AA and had some time, significant time in AAA. Some of these names on this list haven't gotten, you know, farther than high A. It's kind of like some of the names that the Nationals chose to protect that were like, nobody's going to really take a chance because they haven't played past high A and they have to stay on the major league roster the whole season. I don't think it's going to be a guy like that. Hopefully it's a guy that's proven themselves in AA and spent a decent amount of time in AAA that you can count on is going to give you innings. Maybe it's a bullpen arm that can give you innings for the entire season.
It's an interesting because we talk a lot about baseball, the baseball draft, major league baseball draft. You don't really necessarily draft for need
position, right?
Right. This is, you kind of do because again, they have to be on the roster for the entirety of the season. You know, I wouldn't expect them to, even if the best player available is a shortstop, I don't expect them to draft a shortstop and bring in competition for CJ Abrams, right? Like,
right. Cause in the regular draft, you know, you're not seeing those players for 3 years. Who knows,
right.
You know, who's going to be your starting shortstop in 3 years. A lot can change, but this, they're coming now and they need to play now because they have to be there, you know, for the entire season.
At least serviceable. Like,
right.
Maybe not starting, but like,
right.
You have to have some kind of value.
Exactly. So, you know, that's the difference. And you kind of do target position. I mean, unless there's somebody who's like, wow, we have to go out and get this guy because he really can play,
true.
You know, have play over one of our starters already. But you do draft for need a little bit more, especially when you have the number one overall pick like the Nationals do.
So like you're looking at maybe first base, corner outfield, rotation. We talked about it. Maybe a bullpen arm. Bullpen arms are so risky, though, I feel like, because you don't know the longevity of their careers. I guess any pitcher, really, but more so the bullpen. You know, they could have a great season 1 year and then be terrible the next. Like, you're not going to – if the best player out is a catcher, are you going to go draft another catcher? I mean, I know you don't have Tres Barrera anymore, but you already have three on your active roster.
Right. No, it just wouldn't make sense.
Right. So like you're going to look, there are going to be specific positions. It's not as wide, I guess, as like, you know, a regular draft would be. Cause like, you're going to have to narrow down to somewhere that he fits on your roster, can be useful and can, you know, add value to the team.
Right. Exactly. So there are a couple starters on the list that are major league ready, a couple, you know, bigger name relievers, or maybe there's a long list of outfielders this year in the Rule 5 draft. So maybe they go after an outfielder. Yeah. It'd be interesting, but I think they have to take at least one player when you have the number one overall pick and you're going through a rebuild.
Yeah, because at some point too, like a lot of the guys that, you know, you're not going to have all of these guys on your roster anyways. Like, I mean, maybe the 40 man, yes, but like on the active, probably not. Right. So you're going to be able to find to make room. Now the question is, who are the odd guys out? And then, you know, we're talking about Josh Palacios, Alex Call, looking at the pitchers, you know, there aren't too many guys that I would think you can just immediately option off in maybe a Mason Thompson, Jordan Weems use their options, whatever it may be. So it should be interesting. But then you're also like thinking like, all right, you're bringing back Erasmo Ramirez at some point. So we got to make a room for him as well. It's going to be a tricky week for Mike Rizzo. Typically you already have a spot or two open heading into the winter meetings, but they are full capacity right now.
Right.
So over the next couple of days, I would be looking out for a roster move heading into next week, just in case. I mean, they could always like agree to terms with the player and then make a corresponding roster move to make room.
Right.
But if there's nothing made before the Rule 5 draft, I would imagine that they make a move.
Do you think there's any chance they don't take somebody?
I think there is, unfortunately. I think there is a chance that Rizzo just says, no, I don't like, you know, the possibility of it not working out and wasting a roster spot and then just giving that player back up. I would rather go out and sign an actual major leaguer with actual major league experience. I mean, there's only a handful of Rule 5 players that actually pan out, right? Like, it's not like always a sure thing.
No,
like,
it's a gamble for sure.
You know, locally, the easier one to think of is Anthony Santander up in Baltimore. He was a Rule 5 pick from Cleveland years ago by the Orioles, and that has worked out obviously super well for them. But like it's a risk. I mean, it is a risk, and you have to be sure that player is going to be able to play for you next year and be a major leaguer. And I think that they do take one ultimately, but I do think there is a chance that they don't, because I think Mike Rizzo prefers an actual proven major leaguer.
And it's the process of, you know, getting to the right one. I mean, we know the track record of, you know, this organization drafting, you know, their scouting department, their analytics department. I mean, all of that plays a big role into going out and, you know, getting the right one. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm kind of excited.
I'm excited too. I think they've done a good job in terms of scouting, like, current minor leaguers for like trades and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like they just did a really good job, obviously, with the Juan Soto trade.
Right.
So far, you know, still they're not proven yet, but like everyone says that's a good. So like the scouting on that, those are the same type of players that are going to be, well, not to like that prospect level, but the same, you know what I mean? Like minor leaguers. I think they have a good job scouting minor league. It's the amateur draft that has been kind of question marks over the years.
And, you know, I guess there was only really two major leaguers in that trade, but, you know, looking at these guys who have never played in the majors is, you know, a little bit more difficult too.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny to think of, like, they protected like Jackson Rutledge from the Rule 5 draft, but if they had not, like, would someone take him and keep them on this major league roster for an entire season?
Right. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's like the flip of that when they're looking at these guys on the list, it's like some of these arms. Yeah. High A. You're not going to, they can't go.
Some teams do.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess there are two rounds.
Right.
So, I don't know. It'll be interesting. Yeah. But speaking of drafts, so the draft lottery is Tuesday night, airing at 8:30 MLB Network. Of course, the Nationals are one of three teams with a 16.5% chance to land the number one overall pick. Well, here's how I'm breaking it down. Number one overall pick, of course, is best case scenario. That's what you want. Nationals have the worst record in baseball by far. They should get the number one overall pick. If you end up with a top three pick, I think that's okay.
Right.
You take that. You can still get really high value, of course, right there. A top five pick, four or five. Okay. That's good. You know, we saw them get really good value at five in Elijah Green last year. You can still get a top prospect that can boost your farm system and top five. anything outside of the top five, and I don't think they can get lower than seven. So six or seven, I think is a disaster. I think that's bad news for the Nationals if they get the sixth or seventh pick. Now, it's not likely, but it could happen.
But just how disappointing.
It'd be so disappointing.
Like, can you imagine?
Like, the season they just suffered through, and then you get, like, the seventh overall pick next year. For the of course, like we say this all the time, of course this is the first year that the draft was implemented. The
right, of course.
First year the Nationals had the worst record in baseball in over a decade.
I mean, still a top 10 pick is still, you know, right. A good thing. And we know that the Nationals have a much better, you know, history picking within the top 10 than outside of the top 10. They haven't really missed it with a top 5, 10 pick yet. It's those picks later in the first round when they've taken those, you know, hurt pitchers. But still, disappointing when you know you could have had the number one overall pick in any other year before this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sad.
Yeah. So I think you'll be ecstatic with one overall. You'll be excited with a top three pick. You'll be okay with the top five. You'll be super disappointed with outside top five.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, it's going to be a gut punch. So I think you'll hear a big sigh of relief from the Nationals war room, I guess. How are they doing it? Are they like having like is Mike Rizzo going to be standing up there representing the Nationals for the draft lottery? Are they going to have like team celebrities or someone or a current player?
I'm guessing
player?
It's probably going to be Rizzo. Someone
like the NBA makes such a big show, sure. Right? So like if I was baseball, that's what I would do too.
Make it exciting.
Right. But like, I don't think you're going to get like,
you know,
Josiah Gray to fly to San Diego. Well, I mean, maybe you can. Yeah. San Diego in December.
Just for, yeah.
Just to stand there for one day and then like, oh, we got seven.
Yeah,
cool.
I'll be interested to see how much they do that up.
Yeah. And if it's boring, that's a missed opportunity.
Really, really boring.
Yeah. So that's Wednesday night. Tuesday night.
Wednesday's Rule 5 30, draft.
And Wednesday's Rule 5 draft, and that's it. And that's the winter meeting. It starts Sunday night. Tomorrow. Yeah. And you will be there.
Yes.
You will be out in San Diego. When do you leave?
Well, Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
Sunday morning. Come back Thursday. So we'll have your coverage.
Yeah.
You know, from the Rule 5 draft, the draft lottery, all that good stuff. Press conferences. We'll hear from Rizzo, Davey Martinez.
Rizzo every day. Davey Martinez, I think, speaks once. At Massa Nationals across the board. At Amy Jennings News. Be sure to follow up full coverage from the winter meetings. And I'll have coverage from back at home as well, articles and write-ups, and maybe even a tracker of what's going on throughout the major leagues. So be sure to check that out on massinsports.com. Real quick, on a personal note, before we get out of here, Amy, I have to mention that it's been I feel like I've talked a lot about my own personal anecdotes recently, but lots happened, so I don't have another way to put it out there. But I did want to mention that I did lose my grandmother last week on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. She was 81. She was not in great health, but she passed away peacefully. She was a huge Nationals fan,
really?
Huge fan of the podcast. We had set it up on her TV so she could just go to YouTube and watch it on her TV every single week. She followed all of our social media stuff, articles. She watched every single game. She used the Bob Carpenter scorebook to score every single game until she fell asleep. Yeah, huge, huge Nationals sports fan in general, but she loved the Nationals. She, even as far back as Bryce Harper when he first started, Steven Strasburg, Max Scherzer, I think, was one of her favorite players of all time. Juan Soto, all the guys. She loved the Nationals. She watched every single game. She was super excited when they won the World Series.
Super proud of you.
Super proud.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's gonna be weird. I'm used to like getting a couple calls from her. You know, sometimes more than once a week, but you know, every once in a while, being like, "What are they doing here? What's gonna happen with this?" So she did pass away at the age of 81. She was a NSA veteran for a long time. She retired and came out of retirement after 9/11 to contribute back to the NSA's anti-terrorism efforts. So, So she was quite the lady, and she loved her Nationals. She loved baseball. She loved sports in general, but she specifically loved the Nationals. So she will be missed. And I just wanted to put that out there. And here's to you, Nana. Hope you enjoy every single game watching.
The best seat now.
Yeah, she has the best seat in the house. She does. So, So that's just wanted to mention that before we get out of here.
Well, prayers to your family.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. It was been a tough week. It's a lot of ups and downs of the past week. And that's now what, my second grandparent I've lost in less than a year. So, but I got married too. So kind of evening it out. So I'm at a good even emotionally right now. So that's all well. But yeah, just wanted to mention that because she was a big fan of the show and everything we do, and of course the Nationals. So she has the best team that has. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. So I know she'll always be scoring all the games, and then she won't have to worry about falling asleep.
Right.
Yeah. So that's it. Didn't mean to. Sorry for ending up on a sour note or a sad note.
Sour.
Sad note. Well, trying to make it.
But you have to.
Lively.
Yeah. Exactly.
Trying to make it happy. So she's in a better place right now. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, but that's gonna be it for this podcast. Thank you everyone for tuning in, making us a part of your Wednesday afternoon. Of course, if you miss any part of the show, you can watch on the Mass and Nationals Facebook page, YouTube channel, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter at @Bobby_Blanco. At Amy Jennings News. She'll be out in San Diego next week, along with Mark Zuckerman. Be sure to follow all of our coverage on MassinSports.com, social media accounts, YouTube, wherever you get our content. Be locked in all next week. Sunday through Thursday, we'll have you covered from the San Diego winter meetings next week. So thanks for tuning in. Amy, enjoy San Diego.
Thanks. I'll be back.
I don't know if we're doing a show next week or not, but we'll be back before Christmas. So right. We'll have a couple more shows before the actual holidays get kicked off. And so we'll see you then.